We are very focused on our local elections, and just a few weeks away, the November 4th general election here in Connecticut. We are headed to Easton right now, where we are meeting Republican candidate for first selectman there. Dan Lent joins us in studio. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
It's very nice to meet you. And I want to first just introduce who you are to our listening audience and get to know you a little bit better.
Well, I'm a local lawyer. I grew up in town. I raised my family in Easton. And Easton has some serious issues going on right now regarding development and protecting the water supply. Easton has three reservoirs. We supply all the water to Bridgeport, most of Fairfield County. That's over 700,000 people. And we've had protective zoning in place, three-acre minimum zoning near the reservoir since 1941 when they built the reservoirs. And now that's under attack, including from my opponent who voted to break those three-acre watershed zoning rules that in place since 1941. We couldn't believe anyone would do that, and he did. So it's really an important election by Easton standards and for all of Fairfield County. If you drink water in Fairfield County, you should pay attention to this.
So tell us a little bit, is this something that was in place with, Mr. Bindleglass, who decided not to run for re-election, was this something that he aligned with as well?
Yeah, I would say definitely. It's odd. In town, I always say the Democrats in town, and I'm a very moderate Republican. I could be independent. I could be Democrat. But the particular Democrats in our town, including Mr. Bindleglass, have a long history, a documented history of being very pro-development. I mean, Mr. Bindleglass tried to build apartments on the South Park Avenue property that we bought specifically to be a preserve and a park forever. And we had to file a get signatures, make a petition to force a special town vote at one point, and we made him preserve the whole thing. So, we've been fighting this pro-development Democrat administration, including my opponent, Nick D'Addario. He's part of it for years. And it's just going to be a continuation of that. They want to expand commercialization. We call it creeping commercialization in the case law, where, we're residential only for a reason, to protect the water supply. But they want to put stores and kind of like a downtown kind of thing all over and build sidewalks, this and that, and just urbanize and commercialize Easton. So we've been fighting that for years.
So tell us a little bit about you, Dan, and what got you into politics. Have you served in any capacity before?
Yeah, so I'm an environmentalist. So I started out in the Conservation Commission, which deals with the wetlands. And I went to the training for that. I served for many years. You approve projects and you protect the wetlands. Then we actually had no ethics ordinance at all in town. You could be a criminal and be our police commissioner, for example. So other towns had ethics ordinance. I helped draft the ethics ordinance that we have now. We've actually used it successfully to remove some people with, who got in trouble with the law, for example. So, I've been involved for years. Like my wife said, why are you doing this? You're crazy. This is a nobody wants this job. And I said, well, I'm at all the meetings anyways. I get calls every day from the people. There's a group in town who tries to keep everything in their lane and try to, protect the town. So,
what's the name of that group? I'd love to have them on.
Well, there's several different groups, but the one that's probably the most famous is Citizens for Easton, which they work with, for example, Aspetuck Land Trust, and they've been involved in preventing this big cluster house development called Saddle Ridge since at least 2008. They want to put, there's been all many iterations of this, but they've tried to break our 3-acre zoning. It's a 100-acre lot, but has a lot of lakes and wetlands, and they're only allowed to put 21 3-acre minimum lots of residential only houses there. So single family house on 3 acres, you could get 21 on that lot because of all the lakes and wetlands. And now they've changed, my opponent Nick D'Addario voted to break the 3-acre zoning. And by doing that, he helped bring this project back to life. So now we're fighting it again. They want to put 26 or 27 houses and put them all closer together on more like 1-acre lots.
Really quickly, Dan. So if they, so he's already gotten the approval to break that, or that's what he wants to do if he's elected?
No, he already did it. They put that regulation in place a few years ago, and this is interesting because we would go to the meetings, and we would say, "What do you mean you want to break 3 acre zoning? That we've had it since 1941." Nobody thought they would do this. And these five members of our zoning board, they're very powerful. It's a quasi-judicial body. Actually, they act almost like the court delegates their authority to them. And, you know, they didn't listen to the residents, and they did it anyway. And they've got so much objection now that we've made it an elected body in the future. But it's still appointed at this point, and they're going to phase it in very slowly. So there's a lot of damage that's been done. And a lot of the people who did the damage are still on it. And, you know, it's a big problem that when five appointed members don't listen to the residents at all, and they just, you know, do what they want, and they have a pro-development agenda. They say at the meetings, oh, this, you know, we want progress. Progress is the, you know, the dog whistle for development. You know, that's what they mean by progress. They mean sidewalks and new businesses. We have a few businesses that predated 1941. Like we had the Easton Village store, we had the Greiser store, and those businesses deserve to prosper and thrive because they predated the rules. They were grandfathered in, you might say. So, you know, that's what we have. We have Silverman's Farm also.
I was just going to ask about the farms, actually, Dan Lent, because, you know, I look at, so I'm a Milford, right on the Milford-Orange line
sure,
here.
Sure, sure.
And we have a very strong farming community in Orange in particular. So, for example, it's one of the reasons that we haven't.
That's great.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, part of it is also one of the reasons we weren't able to develop, in some regard, a Stu Leonard's, for example, who wanted to move into a big complex that's in the Orange area. And a lot of the times it came back to, you know, especially our farming community really was not for, to your point, a lot of commercial development. What does Easton say about that, especially because you're a very strong farming community there?
Right. So we have a few farms left. We have Snow's Farm, Candy Farm, Sherwood Farm. But, you know, they're under a lot of pressure because, you know, the land's very valuable and there's a big temptation to sell. And not only that, if they sold, there's a big temptation to break the zoning and put as many units as you can on these farms. So, you know, there's state funding. There's OSWA funding where you can, you know, they give out at least $15 million every year to protect land and conservation land. But we haven't applied for that. I would definitely do that. We missed the deadline for this year. Then we also have about $1 million in a land acquisition fund that we haven't done anything with. So I would really try to help our farmers who want to sell and keep it preservation land. We haven't been doing that at all. And then, or at least not this year, for example. And then there's also funding. If a farmer wants to keep funding, the state has some programs where they'll pay them to help subsidize them so they can keep farming. It's really an economics thing, you know. I mean, having a pick-your-own strawberry farm, it's hard to, you know, make the millions of dollars that you can get for selling, you know, your land.
We are chatting with Dan Lend, who is running for first selectman for the town of Easton. And I see here your running mate is someone who is a blast from my past. Christy Sagofsky is running as your running mate. Now, isn't she a current selectman?
Oh, yeah. She's a long time. I think she's going on her sixth term now.
Wow.
Very well respected in town.
Yeah. Christy and I go way back to our News 12 days. She is one of my She's just personally in my news journey. She's one of my idols.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
On News 12, she used to be Christy Olds.
Christy Olds, yeah.
I think she was on every day.
She was one of our night anchors for sure. One of our. I'm not with News 12 anymore, but yes, blast from the past. That's very neat. So you guys are running together, and your opponent Nick Daddario, he is also a current selectman right
now. That's
right.
That's right.
Okay. So I know, and of course, we will certainly reach out to Nick Daddario and his team if he would like to come on the show. Do you guys have any scheduled debates or anything coming up?
Well, that's a good question because we've offered to debate, and so far he refuses it. And you know, the residents, we did an online poll. We have over 100 residents who are demanding a debate. We really don't know why he won't debate. We do know that, you know, early on they wanted to use their moderator, and we said we want a neutral moderator. And then they just...
You should hire me.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Anyone, we would take anyone at this point. But instead of a debate, what he's doing is he has handlers, and they're saying you can email him, and then they will give you a very, you know, manicured answer back, I guess. So I'm a straight shooter, kind of unfiltered, and I'm happy to debate, and he's not. I mean, you can tell he doesn't speak in public.
Well, I'm going to effort and see if we can get him on the show.
Yeah, get him on.
I will. I would love to effort and see if I can
unscripted,
get Nick DeDario on.
That would be great to hear him.
I'm curious, Dan Lund. So if you get the residents' vote in November in Easton, what do you do first and foremost? I mean, obviously, development is for you kind of blocking, if you will, development of the kind that you were talking about earlier. That's clearly a priority of yours. But what can you effectively do as first selectman with this now in place for planning and zoning? As you mentioned, they're a very powerful entity in Easton.
Right. Well, first of all, we have to, you know, just level set again. I mean, if you look at the rules, the first selectman is an ex officio member of every board or commission by rule. So if I want to go to a school board meeting or a finance meeting or a zoning meeting, I can sit down as a member, and I'm going to do that. My opponent says he won't. He's going to stay out of the zoning meetings. And the other thing I can do is I can hire experts. They need to get good guidance. You know, the first selectman hires we have an independent contractor who helps zoning. We can hire different ones with different skill sets. You know, when I went to court, I've filed a couple of lawsuits actually against the town. To protect the wetlands and to stop creeping commercialization. There's a guy who's building a cabinet-making factory in town. You know, the judge said that Easton's planning and zoning is basically a mess. This is a land use judge. And so we need to hire some zoning lawyers and fix our regulations. They don't even make sense. They have typos, and they're not. So if you make a change to an ordinance or a regulation or a statute, you have to make sure that your change reads consistently throughout the whole document, and they don't. They'll change one thing, and then it'll conflict with another section because they're not having the right people do it. They're having it like an engineer try to edit our zoning regulations instead of a zoning lawyer. So, you know, I would immediately just right the ship, you know, start bailing the water out of the disaster that we have under planning and zoning. It's just dysfunctional. And I would stop. A good example is we're getting sued left and right by residents of our town because they have no other recourse. I mean, you shouldn't have to sue your town. You shouldn't have to sue your neighbors because somebody decides to put a sawmill operation next to you and keep you up all night running machines in a residential-only town. And the town isn't doing enough to stop that. So the residents have to sue the town. I had to sue the town over wetlands. It cost me over $80,000 out of my own pocket to.
And it's just a vicious cycle.
Yeah. So it's like, and meanwhile, the town keeps losing these lawsuits, and it's cost. We had a town meeting last night where we had to pay in a special meeting for excess legal fees, and because they keep losing lawsuits because they're not following their regulations. So I would immediately, you know, just go in there and get it back to normal. You know, like this never used to happen before the Bindleglass administration. We never had these many losing lawsuits. We never had this kind of, it's basically, if you go to the town hall, you don't get good advice as a resident. And a lot of times they fight you, and it shouldn't be that way. It should be neighborly, and they should help you, and they should just follow the regulations, and they're not. Instead, they give out special permits to, you know, it's like special favors, basically. You know, if you're the right person and they like you, you can do just about anything. But if you're a normal resident, they, you know, they give you a hard time. And I think everyone should get treated the same. So I would immediately, you know, fix planning and zoning. The other thing I would immediately do is our books are kind of a mess. We got, believe it or not, we got an over $200,000 IRS federal tax lien placed against the town recently. They tried to keep it quiet. They tried not to be transparent and talk about it. So we filed Freedom of Information requests. We found out about it. And then we found out it happened 2 years in a row. So not just once. And, you know, it's pretty hard to get a federal tax lien placed against you. They send you lots of notices. They don't want to levy something like that formally. And it happened now, 2 year tax years in a row. So
So the financials for Easton is also, it seems to be a real concern for you.
Yeah, right now the audit is being delayed, and there's all kinds of, when you get an audit, there's all kinds of notes from the auditors. I mean, we have all kinds of red flags on our audits. And, you know, we need to clean things up. Otherwise, you lose your top bond rating, and then you can't borrow money. We need to borrow money to fix the schools and whatnot. So, you know, it's just a real lack of attention to detail, I guess, would be that I'm a detail guy. And, you know, you don't want to micromanage, but we have a whole town hall full of professionals, and I'm going to let them do their job. But they do need the first selectman to do his job, for example. And,
well, Dan Lent, I unfortunately we have run out of time for today, but I appreciate you really outlining who you are, certainly what you stand for, and explaining your campaign, which is protecting what makes Easton home. And so I appreciate you giving us the time here on WICC, and I am going to link to our website, voiceofct.com. If you want more information on Dan Lent and his team and what he is running on his platform, you could find that on our website. Dan, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I'll give a shout out to all those commuters out there. It's tough. I commuted every day to the city for many years, and then I drove to Stanford. So I feel for you. Hang in there.
Well, we appreciate you spending the time with us here on WICC Commuters. And Dan, thank you so much.